Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhi Tamastu Mavir Vishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Chapter 4. One asks, what are the duties of the Vaishnavas? Then I answer, the Vaishnavas' duties are the eternal duties of the soul. When he is liberated from the world of matter, the Vaishnava soul attains the pure spiritual body. With that body, he engages in devotional activities that express his spiritual love for Lord Krishna. So the activities of the liberated living entity in the spiritual world, who is situated in their eternal service, that are the duties of the living entity here. That doesn't mean that in the same form, it means the same principle, like that. So that can a principle can always be applied. That is the uniqueness of principle. Principle is always applicable. Detail may change according to the time, place, circumstance. Just like even in the spiritual realm, depending upon what the situation is, then the devotees will deal with Krishna differently, like that. But it's like we see the gopis when they're in the presence of the parents, you know, Mother Yashoda and the other elderly gopis, then they're very quiet about their relationship with Krishna. So that is very, very subdued, just very hidden. But then when they're on their own, then it's manifest. And then when they're with younger cowherd boys or those who are intimate friends of Krishna, then also it can be manifest in a more, you know, to some degree. But if it's other cowherd boys who are older or not intimate, then again, it's just like with the parental rasa. So even in the spiritual realm, they make distinction on the situation they're in. It's not just, oh, as I like, I do. That's not the meaning of spontaneous. Spontaneous means you like to do it, but it must be what is best for Krishna's satisfaction. That's the thing. We wanting to do it is part of it. What Krishna wants us to do is the other part. That's always an important thing. Otherwise, it becomes self-centered, and this is a symptom of the non-liberated liberating entity. Even though he's maybe advanced on the platform of Raganuga, still the chanting is going on because the taste he gets, the attachment he has, rather than necessarily the pleasure that Krishna is getting from it. Though that's there, means that's understood, but it hasn't been realized the same as when one gets beyond to the advanced stages of Bhava Sadhana. So that is, one's point has to take oneself out of the center, even though it may be very pure, like that. So in this is that the things there means chanting the holy name. In the spiritual realm, they're always chanting the Lord's glories. They're always associating with the Vaishnavas. They're always hearing about the Lord's glories. They're always worshipping the Lord. And they're always living in the Lord's place. You know, they're living in Vrindavan. Brajvasis live in Braj. Dwarkavasis live in Dwarka. So then, those same principles can be applied here. But it comes in the form of us worshipping the deity. So in Braj, they serve Krishna how Krishna wants to be served. So the same way as then here, we serve the deity how he wants to be served. Like that. They may have their interests of Krishna has like so many ways that you can serve him, and any particular devotee may have the interest to serve in one of those particular ways. Let's say there's 100 options how you could serve. One devotee likes these 5, another devotee likes these 10, a different devotee likes a different set, but they're all within what Krishna likes. This is there. So that is the definition. Spontaneous means is you like to do those particular things that please Krishna. So you may prefer this way of pleasing Krishna, someone else may prefer another way of pleasing Krishna, but its basis is what pleases Krishna, not just what my mind brings up. Though it is said that Krishna, He will reciprocate with somebody as they surrender. So he may create a situation in which he pleases the devotee by that particular fulfilling that desire. But that will not be as intimate or as high a position as what will please Krishna and his devotees. Like that. So one always has to be aware of this, that at some point the transferring of ourself as the center to Krishna as the center. So here what it means is that the eternal duties of the soul means servant of Krishna. And then these various forms, depending upon one's position, it'll take the form it'll take some form. So in the conditioned state, it'll take the form of sadhana, and then in the pure state, it will take the form of prema. When he resides, means the Vaishnava soul, when he resides in the material world, a person who is intelligent specifically accepts all that advances his spiritual life and rejects all that hinders it. He does not blindly follow the orders and prohibitions of the scriptures. When the scriptures encourage devotion to Lord Hari, then such a person happily accepts those teachings. When the scriptures' teachings do not encourage devotion, he does not dishonor those teachings. But that doesn't mean he doesn't do it. He just doesn't speak badly. Like there's a rule that says that you in this, do this particular puja for Kali. It's not necessary for the Vaishnavas. It's not written for Vaishnavas. It's written for the man who is a gross materialist and a sense enjoyer. And he'll basically do anything to gain his needs. So at least if they worship Kali, then they're controlled. They'll at least fulfill their desires without giving too much disturbance to others. So for such persons, it's to keep them basically from getting more and more materialistic or going to hell. So he doesn't dishonor, he just doesn't follow. Right? So and then he says, in the same way, a Vaishnava also honors or rejects the prohibitions taught in the scriptures. So the Vaishnava follows the scriptures because the scriptures are given by Krishna. One can't avoid that. But he takes what is useful for serving Krishna and what is not useful for serving Krishna is just not followed by him. Because all the different rules and regulations are details of original principles of service. So then the original thing is the soul must do service, so therefore service is rendered. But then that service comes in the form of serving the Supreme Lord, serving his energies in the form of demigods or forefathers or mankind or his family or other living entities or nature, like this. In some way it comes that service must be done. So if you're serving the Supreme Lord, then Krishna being the source of all energies, then all these lower states of service are automatically taken care of because the principle has been attained. It has been attained on a higher level. So therefore the details of the lower levels of service aren't important. Unless there's some connection to that higher principle. If they're useful, then it's done. But otherwise, it's not. Like we see, Prahlad Maharaj would respect his father as his father, because he's taking care of him and doing all that and hoping for his welfare. But at the same time, if his instructions went against Krishna consciousness, those he didn't follow. But he never dishonored his father. You don't find Prahlad Maharaj telling his father, who knows, that's a big, nasty, smelly, stinky demon. I'm not listening to you. He never says that. He's always respecting him, calling him, oh, best of the demons. Which for a demon is a compliment. Like that. Remember one person he used to, when he'd write a letter to his father, then he would address in the letter to his father, "Dear, dirty, lecherous old man." And the father found it to be quite a compliment. That he was, an elderly person, but he could still keep up with the best of him, his lecherousness. So therefore, those who have these mundane qualities of materialism, they're actually very pleased when it is noted and pointed out that they are good at it. Like that. So the devotee, when he's intelligent, who is intelligent, respectfully accepts all that advances. So he sees what is there. And then for us, means we take the direction of the acharyas and our understanding of what is proper and what is not. So he doesn't blindly follow. That doesn't mean that in the beginning that one is not doing something one may not fully understand. One has faith in the authority and one is doing. But one should endeavor to understand why. Not from the metaphysical point of view, but from the point of view is of seeing it, how it relates to advancement in his spiritual life, how it relates to pleasing the Lord. These kind of aspects then he should see. Like that. It shouldn't be that, you know, okay, well, it means it's just like you have different levels. Why do you wear a sikha? Okay, sikha is there because to do puja, to do any kind of sacrifice, then sikha must be there. So then, you know, for men, well, why? You know, because basically it's something Krishna likes. That's basically how he's designed it. You know, he likes those in the kind of rasa, the Brahmins and all that, that they have those kind of forms. You know, that they look like that, very clean and simple. You know, the cows look how they look. That his cowherd boyfriends, they look how they look. Mother Yashoda looks how she looks. You know, the gopis look the way they look. So the whole idea is that this is all pleasing to Krishna. It's perfectly arranged by him. So he likes that. So maybe one doesn't understand, but we know Krishna likes it. It's a tradition. Our acharyas follow it. So one understands that it is pleasing to Krishna. Then, of course, then you can bring it down that, you know, it is pious, someone who wants to perform sacrifice and attain, you know, the material benefits, they have to have one, so then that satisfies some people. Then others is that, you know, then you have the Brahmarandra is there, and so this chakra is there, and it needs delicate, sensitive, it needs to be protected, therefore, then the sikha is covering that, and then it's like, oh, okay, then, you know, as long as it gets scientific, then I accept it. You know, Krishna likes it, doesn't like it, that doesn't matter. But scientifically, I benefit by having it means that the top of the head is delicate, so therefore, then I'd like to keep it, you know. Then that's, it's there, Krishna, right? And then another is if someone performs these things that doesn't have one, then, you know, then on the material platform, if he was going for material benefits, he would go to hell. Then it's like, oh, okay, then I don't want to go to hell, so I'll keep the secret. So we see there's all these different levels on why these things are done. Why one would do it.
What about Krishna's going to pull you out of the material
world? Yeah, okay. Then there's one, Krishna will pull you out of the material world with it. So therefore, Buddhists and the impersonalists then can't be pulled out because there's no sikha. Like that. Yeah, so that's, you know, it means these kind of things. They're simple, but then some will say, well, that's simplistic. We want a real answer. But real answer means earth, water, fire, air, ether. And even ether is not understood. We'll just be satisfied with earth, water, fire, air. Like that. So that's called anamoy. That's the anamoy platform. It's where we see the material elements. Then we understand. Like that, yes.
The best answer that they'll all accept is it's completely materialistic, but because they're on the anamoy platform, that they have to, they agree with it, it's completely logical, no, because I like it.
That's the bottom line, yeah. I know one devotee, is that he'll ask why you're doing this. And if you give some scriptural reason like that, he'll argue like anything about it. If you just say, I like it, you know, like you say, I don't eat eggplant. Why don't you eat eggplant? You know, because he likes eggplant. Right, because, you know, it's bad as hell, this, that, you know, my constitution, this, that, blah. So many things. Ah, what do these guys know, this, that, give quotes from Prabhupada, you know, allopath is very advanced, this, that, you know, we don't get into smartas, this, that, so many things. But if you just say, I don't like eggplant, I hate the taste of it, oh, then it's okay. It's perfectly fine. You know, I just don't like it. Or if you say, well, when I eat it, I get sick, then it's okay. But if there's any, you know, pious Shastric reason, then you be prepared for a 15-minute argument over it. And not once, every time you see the person. And not only that, for the last 20 years. Like that. So it is a funny thing. If you just like it, then, you know, it's okay. You know, like someone asks, well, why do you have a dot on your forehead? And you just say, it's fashion. I like it. And it's just like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's the thing. In this age, that's what, you know, feels good, do it. Yeah. What is it? That one shoe company, just do it. You know, don't be mental. Just do it. You know? Like, you know, like, just, you know, say, okay. You know. It's like that one Prabhupada. The Prabhupada didn't like to get involved in those things. You see, once he was on a talk show. It was in America. Some talk show. And the person was asking, you know, Swamiji, you know, you're wearing... You know, all your people are wearing the saffron. Is that some special thing like that? And it says, no, it could be, you know, we just, you know, it's any color. You didn't want to get into it, you know, how they would understand. So you mean so they could wear any color, you know, they could wear blue or green or like that? So Prabhupada said, yes, saffron. And then the conversation moved on because the guy didn't catch that. Because in his own mind, he says, oh, okay, just anything. Yeah, okay. And the Prabhupada said, yes, any color, saffron. And then it just moved on. And the Prabhupada just sidestepped these useless conversations. So in the same way, a Vaishnava also... No, continuing here. A Vaishnava is the best person in the world. A Vaishnava is the friend of everyone in the world. A Vaishnava is the auspiciousness of the world. In this... So we see is that of all people, then there's intelligent, as you described before, there's intelligent and unintelligent. So of the unintelligent, then the best is the Brahman. Then of Brahmins, then the best is the Vaishnava. So that puts Vaishnava as the best person in the world. And so the Vaishnavas actually give auspiciousness because even though the Brahmin may be doing all kinds of nice pious things, it keeps one in the material world. So ultimately it's not auspicious. Because today you're a human, you do so many nice things, you become a demigod. Next life you're a blade of grass. Next life you're a blade of grass. Then, because you've had such an intense taste for sense gratification, there's a very good chance that you may not get serious about devotional service. And so you take up sinful activities to try to fulfill your intense need for sense gratification. And then from there you go to hell. And then after spending so much time there, then you come back up into that position. And then you're ready to do pious activities and become a demigod again. So... Though it is nice, it makes things prosperous in the material world, but we see is that everything's balanced, so the prosperity and the problems are balanced. So it doesn't really rate. So then the Vaishnava is actually the auspiciousness, because then it's touched to Krishna. And then whatever is done takes one out of this material world. So pious activities that are connectable to Krishna and are connected to Krishna by their instruction, by their example, that is the real auspiciousness. Then they show how to get to the transcendental platform. Like that. So they are the best. And they're the friend of everyone because they're trying to help them understand who they are as servant of Krishna. That was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura mentions in the final order. Some people may not appreciate that you're telling them that, you know, what they're doing is not good for them, and that if they take up devotional service, that would be better. But in any case, they are friend of everyone nonetheless. Yes. Okay. So then Vaishnava Das continues. In this way, I've humbly said all I wish to say to the assembly of Vaishnavas. May the Vaishnavas wash away all my faults and mistakes. After speaking these words, Vaishnava Das offered Dandavat obeisances to the Vaishnava assembly, and then sat down to one side. The Vaishnava's eyes were filled with tears. With one voice, the Vaishnavas cried out, "Well done, well done." That would be sadhu, sadhu. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The four directions of Godrum echoed with "well done, well done." The Brahmin singer who had first asked the question could see deep truth in many of the speaker's arguments. although he still had some doubts, the seed of faith in the Vaishnava religion had been firmly planted in his mind. With folded hands, he said, "O great souls, I was not a Vaishnava. Again and again, hearing Lord Hari's holy names, I have now become a Vaishnava. If you are merciful..." Huh? It seems to be a problem for the bookmark. As I put it where I want to put it, but it always it goes where it wants to go. Like that. Maybe the bookmark has decided we should have read these things again.
Maybe it's become a sentient being.
Yes. It is attained consciousness. Someone should call it Saraputta. "I have now become a Vaishnava. If you are merciful and teach me a little more, all my doubts will go away." So should we go ahead to where we were?
I think we're quite far ahead from the, a few classes.
Did we go through this thing?
What chapter did we start to actually go? What chapter was?
Did we do this whole thing about Madhav Das and the woman and all
that? Yeah.
Okay. Did we do the part about the snake?
Yes.
That was in the third chapter. No. That was like, we were like four pages back. Okay, giving up all fear of snakes. He was talking about impersonal, right? Contaminated Vaishnava, religion is two kinds. We went through the... six pages ahead. Okay. But I remember over here. Vaishnava religion, contaminated by impersonal philosophy, is also prevalent in India. According to the impersonalists, in order to obtain the quality of this impersonal Brahman, one should worship Surya, Ganesh, Shakti, Shiva, or Vishnu. I think we did this also. We're on the yogis here. The pure Vaishnava religion is different from these kinds of contaminated Vaishnava religion. It is the true Vaishnava religion. Because of the defects of Kali Yuga, many people do not understand what is the pure Vaishnava religion. They think these varieties of contaminated Vaishnava religion are the true Vaishnava religion. Here's one thing is we have to be very, very careful with is the principle of sharpening the knife on the tree and using the tree to test if the knife is sharp by cutting the tree. Is the acharyas have gone through the vast ocean of rules and regulations of the scriptures, then they have cut that down to just what is actually what Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions is useful for devotional service. But they are in the forms of varnashram and rules and regulations or pancharatrik and all these things that are connected with ritual. Then we hear that one should give up rituals, you know, being attached to rituals and all these social things like this, and one should take up proper Vaishnava religion. So then one has heard this, you know, one has sharpened one's understanding and knowledge on this tree, and then afterwards one uses it against the tree as, just see all these rules and regulations that the acharya has, you know, gleaned from the ocean of them and given one is just what's essential. So you have to be very, very careful about this, because here what he's described as karma mistra and jnana mistra, so-called religion, you know, bhakti, then is, you know, hardcore karmakandis who are worshipping Vishnu for the purpose of going to heavenly planets, and impersonalists who are worshipping Vishnu because they do it. means you have a temple, Guru Vayur, in South India. It is run exclusively by smartas. Each one of them has, you know, the three lines. They run the temple. They do all the things. They go out every night. The deity goes out on the elephant, like we have once a week. They do it 5 times a day. And in the night, it's very big. And with every elephant procession going, they have a group of people chanting Hare Krishna. Of course, they usually start Hare Rama, Rama, like this, because that's what's mentioned in the Vedas. But they go there, and they, bhakti is their method. It's totally different from any of the other Shankara establishments. All the other establishments, then, impersonalism, the path of impersonalism is the main. But this one, they take bhakti as their path to gain impersonal liberation. Yes. So, but therefore you can't really call them devotees. This is what it's talking about. Not that somebody who's a sincere sampradayic Vaishnava who's surrendered to the bona fide, you know, line of acharyas, following their teachings and all that, but still has within his heart, you know, some attachments to material conceptions that may take some time to go away. That this is then some nasty thing of, you know, karma mystery and jnana mystery. It is in the finer sense. You're talking about Baba Bhakti. Yes, these things have to go away. But it's not that then they're not done. Because then they'll say, yes, this must be given up. So then what happens is all the opportunities to get one free of the material conditioning are thrown out. The tools are thrown out. Varnashram is thrown out. Pancharatra is thrown out. Oh, we don't care for the rules. And what's the alternative? American culture and Western culture, you know, make up your own system of worship. You know, like this. You know, it's like, you know, these things like that. It's like, we don't care for the rules, so, you know, we just worship uninitiated deities and, you know, things like that. Make up our own rituals on how to do, you know, these different things. And so, like, one has to be very, very careful to make the distinction of this. Otherwise, this is a very common misunderstanding. Because we know karma, mystery, jnana, mystery, bhakti is not good. But for the conditioned soul, there is no alternative. You don't have another alternative. Because freed from that, pure bhakti is where? Beginning budding stage is called bhava. That's what it's called. It's the bud, rati. It's the beginning of it. And prema is pure. Like that. Bhava is pure. Prema is pure unalloyed. So it says pure unalloyed means even in bhava it's alloyed. There's something mixed there. So therefore one has to understand where the definition is being put for who. Like that. And then apply it. But otherwise it's a very... Varnashram is meant for social systems. Meant for the household ashram and economic development and all those. And then the very same people in that ashram, they say, we don't care for these rules, we chant Hare Krishna. At the same time you say, why don't you send your kid to Gurukul? No, you know, he's got to make it in the world, he's got to make money, he's got to do this, he's got to do that, you know, he's got to be realistic, you know, this. So then, they've made their own religion. And what's that religion? It's whatever is the contemporary, you know, religion that they, you know, is their conditioning, their own natural background. Like that. They won't say something of a background that's not their conditioning. Like that. Right? They'll say the conditioning of their experience, their material experience, they will quote that. They won't say something else. You know, the American won't say European values, the Europeans won't say the British won't say the Australian, this one. No, they'll say what is their background. They were from middle class, they'll quote middle class background. They're from lower middle class, they'll quote that. They're from higher middle, they'll quote that. That is the standard. So this is the point that Bhagavatam makes, is these cheating religions we kick out. Making up your own religion, you know, like this, I think that's what is it? You're making up your own religion, following religion in your own way. No, Bhagavatam is follow religion how Krishna wants, as guided by the acharyas. So one has to be able to distinguish. Therefore, you have to make economic development, yes, but how does Krishna say to do it? You have to live with the family, but how does Krishna say to do it? You know, you have to take care of whatever social needs or this, emotional needs, but how does Krishna say to do it? That becomes then the pure Vaishnava religion. It's not pure unalloyed. but it's the pure Vaishnava religion. So one recognizes that present I'm on the platform of karma, karma yoga, or I'm on jnana yoga, or I'm in between, or I'm on platform of bhava. I don't have to worry about these rules, but for the example of others, I will follow. Like that. That's the uttamas who come as madhyamas. They don't have to follow. But if Prabhupada and all the acharyas just acted as Sukadeva Goswami, then what would we do? Right? What could we do to get to that platform? Just put on a rag or walk around naked and then we attain liberation? No. How long could we do it? No. Not very long. We probably wouldn't even take it up. Therefore, for our state, Dennis said, this is recommended, this is recommended, this is recommended. Then we get good result. And very quickly one moves through the whole thing. It's not good, but, you have to, Prabhupada says, make the best use out of a bad bargain. So that's intelligent, is seeing what bad bargain you have, and what would be best for that bad bargain to get to the transcendental position. And at the same time, is understand us as the soul, what is our position. And so therefore take up the religion of the soul as service to Krishna, the Vaishnavas, his name, form, quality, pastimes. Then with these two things going at once, then one actually attains perfection.
Yes. Can you say something on the difference, or maybe the non-difference, whatever it is, between Karma Mishra and Sakama Karma, Karma Yoga, and Jnana Mishra and Nishkama Karma Yoga?
Yeah. Means you're, I say, one is distinction has been made between those who are not actually Vaishnavas but worship Vishnu for the purpose of karma and jnana. Because factually, if you want karma, the person to go to is Vishnu. And if you want jnana, the person to go to is Vishnu. But these persons then are doing it not accepting that he's actually the Supreme Lord, but the Brahman is actually supreme. So this is to be rejected. That's just flat out rejected. Then to approach, no, Krishna is the supreme, and he's the one in control of everything, supplying everything, doing everything. Then to go to him for your needs, like that. You want to be liberated from the material world because it's just too painful, or you have material needs you want. You know, you just like that. Then you go to Krishna. That's intelligent. But it's not as intelligent as asking Krishna for pure devotion. Because if you have pure devotion, you're automatically happy, you're automatically safe, everything, whatever you want in this world is automatically included. So it's not as good. So then you have karma yoga, basically means is that you can be doing it for karma means activity. So when your main focus is on getting the body, you know, or the, you know, and the, or the, how you say, or the emotional platform to engage in Krishna's service, that is, in general, would be saying karma yoga. And when you're engaging the intelligence and the mind connected with that, then that would be jnana yoga. You know, you contemplate the teachings and seeing how the modes of nature work and, you know, all this kind of, like, how you say, the, like, mental speculation. In other words, you're engaging activities in Krishna's service or mental speculation in Krishna's service. But this mental speculation doesn't mean the mundane mental speculation. This means you are taking the knowledge that's been given by the acharyas and you're trying in different ways to apply it into your life, like that. So it's a dovetailed speculation. So therefore it's useful. So generally it's not called that. You know, then it'll be called, you know, something will be called Buddha Yoga or like that. But the process is that is. Now within that there may be Sakam and Nishkam. So Sakam would mean you're engaging the activities to please Krishna, but at the same time as you want something out of it. You want money, you want your material happiness or peace or gain or safety, something you want. Position, recognition, something. So then you're performing the activity, so that'll be called sakam. So it will take on more of the flavor of the pravriti. then nivriti means that you're doing it to please Krishna. You know, you're at that level and, you know, all this intellectual stuff is just doesn't compute so much. But you can relate to, you know, washing the pots for Krishna and just being engaged very nicely, engage the body and senses in the Lord's service, and then naturally the mind will follow. So in this way you keep yourself busy. Then the jnana yoga means if your purpose is to get out of the material world, liberate yourself, then that would be like sakam, you know, jnana yoga. And if you're doing it because it pleases Krishna, you know, so that you can free yourself from the material contamination so you can better serve Krishna, then that would be nishkam. So, though generally you'll see the both in the karma yoga and in jnana yoga for Vaishnavas, you won't see it so much, but you can. There's always the difficulty, the touch of the mode of goodness, where you're doing it because you want to get out of the material world. You know, in other words, one is attached to knowledge and detachment, like that. So that would be like that. But pure means you're doing it to please Krishna, though you may be engaging the body, you know, and emotions, senses in Krishna's service, or engaging the intelligence in Krishna's service. But they're both considered pure if they're nishkam. Though it generally means the kanistha madhyam platform. And then bhava, if it's done for, you know, what it's done for, then that's the, also, that's generally always called pure devotion, pure. Like that. But the kanistha madhyam platform could be pure or not pure.
I have to excuse me for a moment here. I think it was Atmatattva. He came. And it was when he was initiated. He was telling the story. He came out and he had an infection in his mouth. Like that. And so then, infection always, you know, creates some problems. So it creates some odor. So then when he came up to get his beads, you know, Prabhupada asked what's the four of the principles in that. When he spoke, the Prabhupada moved his head back. You know? Like that. And then you know, he could understand. He says, you know, I've got a mouth infection and this and that. And then, I'm not sure if it wasn't during that day or the next day, then the whole lecture was on infection. You know? The material world is like an infection. You know? Just went into, he just took infection and just made a whole lecture. Let us see. I was just thinking, you just keep going with the kirtans and be like, some of the swamis, they get fired up and they just take the kirtan straight through. Someone says, what about class? I said, this is my class. Yeah. So one has to be very, very careful in understanding the difference that's here in these things, like that. They're very subtle. So depending upon the position, then they're mentioned. For someone who is what was it? You were saying. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions in the Bhakti Loka that prayasa means over-endeavor. But for the conditioned living entity in the beginning, prayasa is necessary because they're so used to just over-endeavoring. So therefore, they learn to over-endeavor for Krishna. You know, it's just like Prabhupada said, if you know, Americans can't build a big temple here, what's the use of your being Americans? Because they're just totally into, you know, complete over-endeavor. So if you can't engage that in doing some big, wonderful thing, then what's the use of it? So we see Prabhupada would engage that ability to over-endeavor, because that was otherwise, then one gets lazy or one gets distracted like this very, very easily, like that. So in the beginning, then things that are not considered good and later stages of devotional service are important, are necessary. They're methods used. But it's later on, then they may not be. But that doesn't mean activity doesn't go on. It always goes on. This is the meaning of Abhideya. There's always an activity. But the purpose of it, so one could be washing pots just because it engages the body and mind, or one could be washing pots at the same time, you know, be absorbed in trying to understand the nature of the material world and devotional, you know, distinguishing between matter and spirit, between the mode of goodness and impersonal and the transcendental of the spiritual realm and rasa. All these things, tattva, rasa, all these different things, while washing the same pots, or one can be washing the same pots and thinking of Krishna, being absorbed in devotion, or any mix of this. So, therefore, one has to understand that these different things are given for different time, place, circumstance. They're all important, they're all correct, but correct in different situations. So someone is advanced and they're still keeping attachments to, you know, prayasa and other things like this, that may not be good. But then someone who's not advanced, then it's either that they're going to, because of ignorance, then if they don't have a motive, passion pulls one out of ignorance. So the ignorant person, because of attachment, works. Right? It means your common person works, because if they don't, they'll starve. But if they didn't have to work and wouldn't starve, they wouldn't work. It's a very simple thing. So therefore, that endeavor pulls them up from ignorance. So in the same way as if one comes into Krishna consciousness and one doesn't have some activity to keep them busy, one will just sit back and enjoy the ride. But then one doesn't progress. And because of how you say, the nature of the modes of nature, because of the modes of nature, then one will become distracted because you have to keep yourself busy. And so then instead of getting into devotional activities, you find other side activities, this, that, something else to keep yourself very, very busy, something very important to do. So therefore, then the acharyas have given us all these different things so that from the beginning levels to the advanced levels, there's always something to do that matches the mentality. So, anyways.
How do we differentiate between endeavor and over-endeavor? How do we, for ourselves, how do we?
Endeavor is that we're engaged properly. We're satisfied, others are satisfied. And we see it matches the scriptural rules. Over-endeavor, generally we see we're not satisfied and others are not satisfied. And then we may see, if we can study, then it may be outside of the rules for our position. Does that make some sense? Yeah. I mean, it's just like, let's say for a brahmachari, basically if he's just performing brahmachari activities, respect is not very important for his service. Because performing menial service, this and that, it's not important. But let's say they have a position of authority, like a temple president or sankirtan leader, then some respect has to be there so that the service will go nicely. Now, if one over-endeavors to get that respect and do this and that, that's there. But if one just endeavors, just how much it needs to be for the service, then that's useful. So you have to see. Because otherwise, then, if over-endeavor will generally, it's not pleasing to Krishna, not pleasing to us, will not be pleasing to others. Because Krishna is not pleased, no one will be pleased. So that's one way to see. If Vaishnavas aren't happy, then there's maybe something wrong. Like that. Of course, one also has to see what Vaishnavas like that. But in general, if the Vaishnavas are pleased, then you can see that something's going right. But specifically, one's own authorities and those persons that one holds as authoritative in your life, inspiring in life. If they're happy with it, then good. And if not, then one has to check. And has to inquire, try to see, be contemplative. Does that make sense?
You mentioned how Prabhupada engaged the mentality to this thing. But then, in that case, everybody was Prabhupada was satisfied, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Prabhupada is satisfied. The point is, it's just, if you do it for your position, jnana and vairag automatically come. So then automatically one with time moves from the karma to the jnana platform. It doesn't mean karma stops, it just means now activity is done with knowledge, while before activity was more done with sentiment. Like that, with attachment, like this. But then it comes, this activity is done with knowledge and detachment. That's then when one gets liberated from the material stage. Means by performing karma, then it brings you to the platform of jnana. That platform brings you to liberation. Like that. So then that's the end of the line of that use. That the importance of those activities are done. Means Varnashram has completed its purpose. The Diksha aspect of Pancharatra has completed its purpose. It's gotten one to the liberated platform. Like that. Varnashram will get you to Brahmabhuta. Pancharatra will get one to Swarup Siddhi. Bhagavat will take you to, you know, Mahabhava. So that's the whole process. So it's done its work. But it has to be able to do its work. We have to accept the tools and use it, otherwise it's not. So because they could, the tools, it's just like a knife. A knife can do wonderful things, but because it also can do a lot of damage, if misused, therefore there may be so many discussions and restrictions on the knife. You know, don't hold it like this, don't do that, so many things like that. So you get the idea knives are bad. No, knives are good. But one has to know that how it used. Same time is attachment to the knives and, you know, just getting totally into the knives and developing a whole knife culture and I got this knife and talking with your friends, hey, check out the knife I just got, you know, I got this from this catalog here, you know, it's really good, you know. Like these things, and that's useless. So therefore, there may be so much talk about this process of karma and jnana that we're saying, you know, how it's bad. But at the same time, we talk about how it must be done. So therefore, some will take, you know, that you have to do the rules and regulations that are attached to that, and others will say you throw it out. So it becomes niyamagraha. But the thing is one has to take both. One does it without the attachment, you know, like this, and with, you know, proper understanding and these kind of things. So it's done, but one doesn't become attached to it. And one is careful about using it properly. You know, if one misuses it, it'll make trouble. Like that. Does that make sense? Yes.
When you speak about attachment and detachment, I was just wondering, like, how much we can do actually about this? Do we depend on Krishna, or we can, because when you're attached to something, then you're really attached, it's really difficult to detach yourself.
Means Krishna, he is the one who can pull out these attachments. You know, it's just like Prabhupada gives the example of you going to somebody's house and there's a big dog there. This dog is a problem, but the owner of the dog can pull the dog back. So the same thing is those attachments are there. If you want them to go for Krishna's pleasure, then Krishna will take them. But in the process of taking them, he will check that you actually want it taken. So therefore, even though you want the attachments to go, one might find that the opportunities for that attachment remain. Does that make sense? It means what you are attached to and the opportunities to be attached to it remain. But he'll start taking away the attachment. But because it's there, then he can test on whether you are still want to be attached to it or want to be detached to it. So even though the attachment may be there, if you want to be detached to it and maintain that, then you'll see slowly they'll all go away. Krishna will remove it. But he'll only remove it when you want it to go away.
So this means we have to develop desire to...
Everything, yeah, that's it. Desire is the key to everything. We have material desire, we're here. We have spiritual desire, we're in the spiritual world. Desire is actually the key to the whole process. What you desire. If you desire to please Krishna, you desire to please the acharyas, you desire to be engaged in Krishna's service, you know, under the direction and the, you know, the mercy of the acharyas, then that's the direction we go. We want to enjoy something here or anything, so then it's that. Because that's the freedom of the living entity, is desire. That's all. Everything else is controlled. You know, you want something, it moves in that way. You know? And you want material things, then the material nature starts to take you towards those things. You want to go towards Krishna, then the spiritual nature will take you towards Krishna. Because it's the same person. Right? You understand?
Yeah.
The mother is nourishing you, she is punishing you. It's the same person. So there's one Maya, but when it's taking you to Krishna, it's Yoga Maya. When it's taking you away from Krishna, it's Mahamaya. It's just two faces of the same energy.
Desire is coming from the soul.
Yeah. Means you have to distinguish between the, means it's a technical point. The desire is coming from the mind, the specific desire. But the principle of material desire or spiritual desire is coming from the soul. When the soul is thinking, I want to enjoy the material energy, then the mind has plenty of opportunities and varieties to try to enjoy. You tried that didn't work, but you know, these things we've heard are good, or I saw this in the magazine, that looked pretty good, and I heard my friend talk about that thing, that seemed pretty good. So the mind is always looking for opportunities, like that, all these seeds of desire in the heart. But the soul, when it decides it doesn't want to enjoy the material energy, wants to surrender that independent nature and surrender to Krishna, then we see that the desires of the mind have to start changing.
I'm sorry, but if the soul is covered and is bewildered and is driving and senses are there in mind, then how the soul can decide that it wants actually the spiritual?
Association. That's the whole key to everything, is association. So depending upon association you keep and your practices in devotional service, then that will take you more dynamically towards Krishna, or you know, you'll be fulfilling your material needs in Krishna consciousness, but Krishna consciousness may not be the prominent thing, or one may be, you know, the weeds are growing so much, one is actually, you know, subtly moving out of Krishna consciousness. So, in some sense. So association is maintained. Is it on this point or a different point?
This time. Another, I just wanted to ask, on karma, you said karma brings all the way to Brahma Bhuta. Some state that since bhakti itself can bring one to Brahma Bhuta or can purify the heart,
mm-hmm.
Why should we perform karma mixed with bhakti?
Well,
because only when it's mixed with bhakti it purifies, otherwise it doesn't purify.
Yeah.
So why not just go to...
pure bhakti.
Yeah, and
that's the best. That's what Krishna recommends. He says, best is you surrender to me right now and become a pure devotee this second. That's the best. Why waste time in the material world? Going through all this endeavor, getting sidetracked and all that. Gopis did it. Maharaj Katvanga did it. The wives of the Brahmins did it. So many have done it in the past. Bali Maharaj surrendered everything. This is the best. But if that's not possible, then Krishna says, then the next alternative is follow the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti. So then sadhana bhakti engages the body, the mind, the words in Krishna's service. So that means the body, you know, then all the senses, then the mind is the seat of all those desires, and the intelligence is then that platform of jnana, discrimination, all that. The body is the ego. I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm old, I'm young, I'm this, I'm that. We have all these things. One may say, oh, you know, why do you address me like this? You know, Mataji, oh, we're not this body, why do you call me that? You know, so then what should we call? Hey, you? You got to call something. But because they identify with the body, therefore that's said. Otherwise, they know it's just, I'm in this body, so, and you want to, you want to identify that space where that soul is. So it's very easy to identify in connection with the, you know, what's around that soul, which is that particular body. And so being a female body, therefore, out of respect, you say Mataji. Like that. But you're not referring to the soul. You're referring to the conditioned nature. And because that soul understands they're not the conditioned nature, what do they care? What do you call it? You say, my dear table. You know, this is Krishna's energy, Prabhu. You know, he says, you know, why do you discriminate that it's a table? It's made out of earth, water, fire, air, like the floor. You know, but then this is not intelligent. Because intelligence means being able to discriminate. So if you're discriminating between the body and the soul, then you actually have to discriminate between the body and the soul. Otherwise, saying you're doing for the position of prestige is not discrimination. Like that. Otherwise, if you're not, what do you care? You know, someone, if you're an old person and someone calls you an older man, so walking with one devotee, you know, who'd been in Mayapur since in the 70s, they regularly visit and had been away for some time. So at the first they would just call him, you know, Prabhu or this or that. You know, or, you know, according to whatever position he had in the administration. Then you notice that you're some, you know, years down the line, then they would start calling him Dada, which means older brother. You know? So it generally means he's a little bit more older than them. You know, but you know, whatever it is. Then just a couple of years ago, he was walking down the road and someone wanted to know, you know, where's the guest house or that, and they came up and said Dadu, which means old man. And then it was kind of like, wow, yeah, getting, you know, he's like nearly 50 now, you know, gray hair, and you know, you get old, dumpy, and all this kind of stuff. And then he goes, yeah, I'm old. So this is how people perceive, and then from that, the whole culture goes. Because you have to relate to another living entity. So you have to relate through something. What's the medium? The souls are just going to commune by some new age, you know, what do you call it? Something from, the Pleiades or something like that? You know, just, what do you call that? Telepathy or something? I mean, that's rasa or what? No. Is Mother Jashoda has a form, and she's called Mother. So in the spiritual world, they have no problem with it. You know, the cowherd boys are boys, therefore Mother Jashoda treats them as young boys, the cowherd girls and the young girls, and so then they have a relationship. So you have to have a relationship between the souls. So then this is just a medium. You're in this position, so therefore that's your way you relate to others. You have to have some medium. You know? So in the spiritual world, it manifests according to our natural love for Krishna. So therefore we're fully satisfied with that. In the material world, that manifests due to our present material desires. So if we like it or not, it doesn't matter because it's what we created for ourselves. You know? Does that make sense? You know, we created it, so if you don't like it, you can only blame yourself. Right? If people call you Dadu and you don't like it, you can't. It's your fault. You're in this body that gets old, and you are old, so therefore, you know, if you don't like being a Dadu, then you should have gone back to Godhead, you know, years ago. You know? Was it? Die young and have a beautiful corpse or something like that, you know. You know, so it's your fault, you're in that position, but the point is Krishna consciousness is so wonderful, it doesn't matter what position you're in, you can engage that in Krishna's service. And it doesn't matter. Each position is just as valid for elevation as any other, as long as it's seen and understood and engaged. That's the... Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. You had something?
Yes. Going back to the topic of desire.
Yeah.
Seems like it's almost magical how a soul with so many material desires somehow or other develop or reawaken back to the spiritual desires. Mm. You mentioned association, but you would like to...
Yeah, it's only by association that comes. Is that by the association of the Vaishnavas, then we get the opportunity for taking up devotional service.
by association of Vaishnavas, then we're encouraged in devotional service. And by the association of Vaishnavas, then we perfect devotional service. So basically the root is the devotees. That's why you see Rupanuga, Raganuga, all these, those are in connection with devotees, not Krishna. Because Krishna, you have to serve Krishna. That's the principle. The soul's natural position is serving Krishna. That is just, you know, foregone conclusion. But now how you're going to serve is depends upon the devotees that you're following. Those, some devotees are serving Krishna in a particular way that pleases him. You like their service. Therefore, you follow those devotees in their service to Krishna. We like how Rupa Goswami serves, you know, Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Like that. So therefore, we follow him. You know? So that is the position.
For,
does that make some sense?
For us, yeah, it makes sense. But for us, that we already started a little something in devotional service, it makes a lot of sense. But when we were, or when other people, or the position where other people are, like really, really far from Christian consciousness, it's almost like miracle.
Yeah, but the miracle is still the Vaishnavas. It's just like you go out, you know, like in Australia, they have this, I don't remember where it is, but there's some place, sometime in the year they have this crazy festival where everybody in the city goes out and starts and runs from one side of the city to the other. Huh? Sydney, right? You know, it's just kind of a big fun. So then the devotees, they go there and they get huge amounts of oranges. And then cut them up in pieces, and as people come by the finish line, they just hand them out to everybody. And everybody loves the devotees for that. They have no idea that that's devotional service. You know? Or you take down there, they have this beach. It's like very famous, Bondi Beach. So then they take a Roth cart down there and drag it along there at, you know, at you know, New Year's Eve when everybody's completely, you know, so drunk and completely crazy and maybe dressed, maybe not dressed, doesn't matter, you know. And they have a big festival, big kirtan, distribute prasad, and everybody loves it. You know, it's part of the scene. You know, if it didn't happen, they'd wonder, hey, where are the Harveys, you know, because they always have this big festival. They don't know it's devotional service. So that is the whole thing. That is how our fortune is made, is through the devotees. So because of that, then we come in contact. You know, there was no reason. We don't see that, you know, that we filled out a form or did something that, yes, I want to bump into this devotee on the street selling a magazine and he'll invite me to, you know, a program and then like this. And then when I go to the program, I'll be convinced by the philosophy. You know, like that. That catches my attention, the philosophy. And then when I eat the halava, then that, you know, signs and seals it. You know, and then just, no, it just, it's by, because they're following the order of their authorities, therefore it becomes perfect. You know? It means Prabhupada's following the order of his master, he's following the previous like this, and then Rupa Goswami has given, Rupa and Sanatana have given the directions, and that's because Lord Chaitanya has told him like that. So then following that, to please the Vaishnavas, one performs these, and then by that, then people are benefited. And then they take up, then they get the opportunity to take up. So basically, Vaishnavas are the key to the whole thing. Without the Vaishnavas, then the whole process doesn't work. Because one may say, well, why not? Why I can't just, you know, without them? But then we see is that idea may be kind of touched with the impersonal. Because Krishna, he himself is Atmarama, so he's one person containing everything. And so, because of that, he is satisfied in himself. Everything is there. But to increase that, then he has expanded the Vaishnavas. Right? When we say Krishna expands, what does he expand? He expands the devotees. So expanding those devotees is to interact. So therefore, interacting with devotees is the most important thing for Krishna. He even comes to the material world for the main purpose to associate with the devotees. Then because the demons make trouble for the devotees and make trouble for the innocent, therefore they have to be corrected. But he comes to associate with devotees and to
perform as pastimes, it will catch the minds of the devotees and then attract them to back to Krishna. So the interaction between Krishna and them and the other devotees can happen. So interaction with devotees is the most important thing for Krishna. So naturally it's the most important thing for the devotees. Because that then pleases Krishna. Because the advanced devotees, they perform their interactions to please Krishna. So they know how to please Krishna. We perform our activities to please them. Because they know who Krishna is and what pleases Krishna, we don't know. Like that, we know them, they know Krishna. So if we please them, then Krishna is pleased. Does that make some sense?
Point that will explain how problem is with Vaishnavas then we become attracted to Krishna and develop spiritual desires. Then we see that the Vaishnavas then they engage us in service of Kamadev, and that's the god of desires. So by associating with them, then actually one develops spiritual desires.
One has to be careful to see that the desires are kept within the realm of purity. Otherwise, then the facilities that the Vaishnavas offer, we may find, don't fulfill our facility. Means the devotees are offering us ways to engage in devotional service, that we can be, dynamically involved. Like that. It doesn't mean necessarily living in the temple, but they're giving us methods that we can use in the temple or even when we're on our own. Now, if we cultivate properly according to how they say to cultivate desire, then we can keep within that path. Otherwise the tendency is then we may go off that path for our own purposes. Like that. Because we have to be able to distinguish between the spiritual and material. And dovetailed. Right? So that's a science. And so what spiritual, pure spiritual desire, pure material desire, but then what is dovetailed desire? And what's the quality of the dovetail? Is it karma nisya dovetail, jnana nisya dovetail, like this? Yes.
So regarding the detachment point, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, detachment without attachment to Krishna is just mystery.
Is?
Is just mystery.
It's misery.
It's misery.
Yes, the other side of attachment. Attachment's misery. Material attachment is misery. So naturally, material detachment is misery also. It's just like when you're poor, it's miserable, and you want money. When you get money, you're miserable because you want to keep it. Right? When you have attachment, your fear is you'll lose it, and when you have detachment, your fear is you will gain it. So both are miserable.
Hankering and lamenting.
Yeah, hankering and lamenting. Both are there. Because you're situated in goodness and you're worried you're going to lose that goodness. Because there's so many situations to create a problem. So, think cool.
But seemingly, if you're going to work on detachment, then you don't have a place to hang on.
If you're going to work on detachment.
Yeah.
No, that's why you have to cult. That's why there's two. It says there's everything is for supporting this one rule. Always remember Krishna, never forget. But we see the one rule has two parts. Never forget means that you have to cultivate the detachment from the material world that gets us out of the material world. But at the same time, you always have to remember Krishna. So you have to cultivate the processes of devotional service that develop that attachment and attraction to Krishna. Your hearing, your chanting, association with Vaishnavas. Like this. The worship of the deity. These are the positive. Then the negative, it gets you out of that detachment. That's all the various rules and regulations that regulate you. You're getting up, you're taking your bath, the varnashram, all these different kinds of things. Your cleanliness, your truthfulness, your morality, all these different things. Those help you get rid of the material attachment and develop detachment to the material world. But that on its own is not enough. We mentioned that will get you up to liberation.
but that's all the farther it can take you. And so liberation is not enough, it's not satisfying. You have to get to prema. So always remembering Krishna, those aspects will get you there. So without that, then all the other aspects are useless. But to say that, well, because it's useless, therefore I'll just give it up. But Krishna recommends that. But that means this second you have to become a pure unalloyed devotee and give up all attachments, all material endeavor, everything. Just sit down and chant Hare Krishna all day and not care for eating or sleeping or position or place to stay, nothing. If you can do that this second, do that, that's the best. Why waste time? But if you can't, then the needs we have to do, well, I have to be practical, means I have conditioned nature, means I have material desire. So then what are you going to do with that material desire? You have it, you have to purify yourself of it. Otherwise, how much material desire is there, that much Krishna is not there. It's that simple. You can only put Krishna in, there's only 100%. You can't get 105%. So if you have 50% Maya, you can only put in 50% Krishna. If you have 20% Maya, you can put in 80% Krishna. When you have no Maya, you have 100% Krishna. It's not I can have 100% Maya and 100% Krishna, no. Or you can't even have 1% Maya and 100% Krishna. So that also has to be addressed. That's the difficulties, because two things are being done at once. And we're used to just doing one thing at one time. I can relate to karma, I can relate to jnana, I can relate to, okay, the devotion, but that I'm going to have to use all of it at once, that's difficult, right? Because we have the gross and the subtle body, we have material contaminated consciousness, but that's not the nature of the soul. So the soul is to be engaged in the spirit transcendental activities of the soul. That must be done. But at the same time, it's because we have attachment to the gross and subtle body and material contamination, the consciousness. Therefore, then we engage in these other activities of the rules and regulations of liberation. That is also given. Right? The regulated principles of freedom. Right? And with sword, armed with sword of knowledge, then you cut your way out of the material world. So we see is the regulations, that knowledge, that will free one from, that will cut down the tree. It doesn't say it'll give you, that it itself gives the bhakti. It frees you from the material world. And because you've done it for Krishna, for the purpose of attaining, then it's the same as devotional service. So then it helps you in developing bhakti. It also becomes part of your developing, always remembering Krishna.
But in the earlier stages, you're not going to do it for Krishna. You just try with it and you're going to give it up.
That's you. There's a touch. Theoretically, you want to do it for Krishna. Otherwise, why come to this movement? But it's theory.
Yeah.
Like that. But at least you ask anyone. Any devotee, no matter how enthusiastic or how fried, you know, in the temple, out of the temple, you know, engaged in service, absolutely hasn't been engaged for 10 years, you ask them, all of them, their goal will be to develop your love for Krishna. But the thing is, this is just on which platform they're on at the time. Okay. So in the beginning, then it's more theory. And so therefore, we know the body, we engage in the activities of the body. And we hear the philosophy in that, how much we can. But we have to keep busy, you know, and do something useful. Like that. Then slowly, slowly, then that realization develops. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So we should end here. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Jai Gaura Hare 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 Hare